You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Well, at long last, that Mueller report is finally out, Linda. And guess what? Surprise, surprise. No evidence of collusion and no further indictments.
Well, and we're nobody, and we probably could have told him that to start with. Because
actually, Linda, we're kind of big deals here, okay? I mean, we're American citizens. We matter, okay?
We do matter. And the American citizens should have mattered a lot more in this entire investigation, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the way the entire investigation was conducted, you know, in my belief as a forensic investigator, was completely flawed. You pick Mueller, who is James Comey's best buddy. Both shared the same position in the FBI. Comey got the secret handoff by Mueller. And then Mueller goes ahead and picks all sorts of investigators, you know, attorney investigators on his special staff that all hate President Trump. I mean, you could see from the get-go that this was going to be a horrible investigation. The one nice thing, and a lot of people will disagree and disagreed along the way of this, that Trump should have shut it down a long time ago. I think Trump, you know, played his hand very well. No restrictions, no obstruction whatever. He let them take as much time as they wanted and spend as much money as they wanted. And the end result was no collusion and no indictments.
Right. And everybody that did get indicted for something had nothing to do with collusion. And in fact, it was a witch hunt, just really for people that were close to President Trump. And I feel so bad for a lot of them, Ron, because people lost their homes. They lost everything that they've worked for. And just to what end here? And these people were despicable in the way that they handled this. And the person, you know, as I read about things that are being said about the final conclusion of the Mueller report, is the one person that I really enjoyed reading the most is Doug Schoen, who is a Democrat. And what his stance is that the Mueller report should be rejected by every American who cares about the concept of fairness because it's the product of a process and a special counsel team that were both fatally flawed from the beginning. So I want to spend some time with you and let's go through some of that.
Yeah, but you know, let me clarify a couple of things. First of all, I'll clarify one comment that I made, and that is, you know, no indictments. Wait a minute. There were, I think, 34 indictments. No new indictments is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
But in those 34 indictments, and so far when we've been watching television, this is one of the things that the Democrats are having to hang their hat on. Well, there were 34 indictments. Well, wait a minute. The vast majority of those indictments were Russians. Okay, so they were indicted Russian conspirators and co-conspirators.
For interference, not collusion.
Correct, for interference with our election. But there were no ties that were able to be established by Mueller and an investigative team that showed any nexus or connection between anybody in the Trump campaign or President Trump and those Russians trying to manipulate our election. And I think that's very, very important. The next thing is those Americans that were indicted for relatively minor things like misrepresenting themselves or maybe lying during an FBI investigation to the investigators. But we understand now, at least common sense people, especially those people in law enforcement, should understand that they set up perjury traps during those interrogations with those people. And so that's how you get people like Michael Flynn and Roger Stone and people like that thrown in. But even with the charges in the indictments for those people, there was still no charges that linked the President of the United States to any of the work that those people who were indicted did.
No, that's correct. And, you know, I mean, the truth is that virtually anybody can fall into a perjury trap. Just who remembers? I mean, I don't remember what I had for breakfast yesterday. So who remembers what you said and who you said it to a year ago, 5 years ago, 6 months ago, any amount of time ago? I certainly wouldn't. And so anybody can fall into a perjury trap because you can contradict yourself. Even if you're trying to be as honest as you possibly can be, you might say something different one day than the next. And that's for everybody, Ron. It's not just for these people. And that, in my opinion, is what happened to General Flynn. That was a true travesty of justice there. But the people also that were investigated by the Mueller team said, really to a person, that they really tried to push them into a corner to say something against Trump. And they were threatening them, and they were,
threatening their families.
Threatening their families with jail time.
Exactly. It was a coercive interrogation.
It absolutely was.
And I'll tell you what, I think Giuliani and other members of President Trump's legal team played it right. And I was saying this all along, as a person that's done many, many interviews, many interrogations, ethical ones. And I said, they should not bring the president of the United States to the interview. Let them prove their case. If they've got a case, Trump doesn't have to say anything. And by the way, that's his constitutional right. He doesn't have to say anything. He can invoke. Let them make their case before the trier of fact and see if an indictment resolves from that. I wouldn't have talked to him. If I would have been involved in this thing and they would have called me up through my attorney, I would have said, hey, guess what? You know, I'm not coming in.
Well,
okay. Or if I am, I'm taking the fifth the whole way. If you guys think you've got a case against me, go ahead. You know, let me know how it works out for you. Yeah. I'm not saying anything.
Well, and I think I'm just going to digress for a second on this and get back to it. Is this is in just such direct contrast to the way that Hillary Clinton was treated, with allowing really her witnesses in the room with her, with not putting her under oath.
Destroying the computers, destroying the Blackberries, holding back on emails. I mean, having an extra witness in the room. That never happens.
No. And look at the difference in the way that these people were treated. So I want to go back to just the beginning of this, because this is bothersome. First, you have the FISA affidavits that were put out, that were, you know, based on falsehoods to start with. And the second is that under Section 600.1, the appointment of a special counsel is only triggered when a determination is already made that a criminal investigation of a person or matter is warranted, when the Justice Department has a conflict of interest, and when the appointment would be in the public interest. And then under Section 600.3, the investigation must be conducted by a special counsel team with a reputation for integrity and impartial decision-making. None of that happened in this case. And you have James Comey, who set up that we get a special counsel. And, oh, by the way, that special counsel happened to be one of his very best friends.
And his mentor, and the guy that basically recommended him for the FBI director's job, who was the former FBI director, Robert Mueller.
And then you have Rod Rosenstein, who had offered to wear a wire to entrap the president of the United States.
And more importantly, Linda, who had signed off on one of those FISA warrants, where now it's extremely doubtful that there was ever probable cause for that type of warrant to have been issued.
So what Doug Schoen says in his article is that the decision to appoint Mueller was corrupted by people with a clear political bias, who hoped to accomplish through the Justice Department what was not accomplished for them through the election.
I absolutely agree with you. And by the way, all my comments about, you know, President Trump shouldn't have, gone to the interview process, and my comments about me, I wouldn't go through that interview process. That's all predicated by everything that you just brought up. If you know that there is a corrupt investigation, if you know that there's actually conspiracy and collusion between investigators and people of special interest, you know, against you, you don't stand a chance in that interview. Why the heck would you go to the interview and not claim the Fifth Amendment? And so with people like Flynn and Roger Stone and, you know, all these other people, I'm just kind of wondering what kind of legal advice they got, right? Because I'm telling you what, I wouldn't be saying anything. You got a case, then run it up and let's find out what happens.
Well, you had the people, the Peter Strzoks, the Andrew McCabes, the Lisa Pages of the FBI.
All against you.
That were all against Trump at the point in time. Well, actually before the election even happened, but they were in shock when Trump won. So they had a plan B, and this sounds like this was their plan B. And the all of these people concocted this plan to get President Trump out of office.
Yeah, and do you think that's what Peter Strzok was referring to in Lisa Page, to Lisa Page, when we got the text message that said, well, we have insurance?
Oh, I absolutely do. And they had all the players in play. And, you know, it just started falling apart. And when President Trump, you know, fired Comey, that started a whole nother, you know, dominoes falling. I really wish he would have fired Rosenstein as well, because I don't understand why he has been there that long. I know that he will be out of there very soon, but I don't feel that he should have been there for the last 2 years.
No, I completely agree. You know, this just goes to show you that there are the rich ruling elite that there is one type of justice system for, of course, partial justice towards them. And then there's the other justice that all the rest of us have to endure. Right. So the rich elite, like the Clintons, get off with, you know, everything that you can imagine. Special treatment, no prosecution, agreements of no prosecution, agreements not to hand over certain things, agreements to allow them to actually destroy evidence, forensic evidence, BlackBerries, laptops, you know, all sorts of stuff like that. And with us, if we were to have done anything like that, we would have been indicted for obstruction of justice and destruction of evidence.
Right. And you know, I mean, there's more to this as we go on down the story and the history of this. So when Mueller is appointed as the special prosecutor, he's going to put a team together. And the regulations in Section 600.4, they grant the members of that special team extraordinary powers, allowing them to unilaterally charge or threaten to charge anyone they decide interfered with or somehow obstructed their investigation. Okay, so it is incumbent upon that special prosecutor, Ron, to put people on his team who are above reproach. Mueller didn't do that.
Right. He did the opposite.
He put a team together that were completely handpicked to meet supposedly the highest standards, but they failed that because he picked lawyers who guaranteed that any report issued by his team would never be accepted by anybody because they were so biased against the president to start with.
Well, you know, one of the things that I've got a significant problem with, and maybe this will come out later if there's any future investigations that I want to talk with you about, but where is the oversight to the special prosecutor, right? To the special investigator, the special prosecutor. And this is a problem that I have on the municipal level and on the state level when these different organizations do investigations against law enforcement. Where is the oversight with these people? You know what I mean?
Well, sure.
Okay, so if the Congress and the Senate knew that Mueller was stacking the deck with anti-Trump attorneys and investigators, where is the oversight that says to Mueller, hey, wait a minute, fella, we're granting you the special investigator privileges, but we're not going to allow you to stack the deck like that. That's ridiculous.
Well, if you just look at his top deputy, Andrew Weissman.
Right. Excellent example.
Right. Weissman has been for 30 years, okay, for three decades, he has been accused for wrongfully securing convictions by withholding evidence, misleading the courts, and perverting the justice system. He was singled out by a federal judge for his extraordinarily unethical conduct in a previous case.
And that's what I remember about him, by the way.
And this is the guy's top deputy in this. So this, you know, President Trump was right from day one to say that this was a witch hunt. If you look at everybody that was on that Mueller team, they were all biased against Trump to start with and wanted him out of office.
Well, look, here's my next question then. So now that this news is out and everybody's going to begin to posture, so what do you think is next for the Democrats, such as Pelosi and Adam Schiff out of California, Pelosi out of California, and then Schumer out of New York? What's their next step? What do you think?
Well, I think that they're going to double down. I don't think that they're going to have to accept that there's no convictions to be had on this or no indictments to be had on the Mueller report. But whatever else the report says, they're going to find something in there to use and nitpick at. I mean, I'm sure that Mueller wouldn't write a glowing report about President Trump no matter what, but they're just going to turn it and find something else.
Well, you know, I'm thinking, you know, and then speaking of Schumer, that, he's going to try to hang his hat on or try to deflect and redirect to the Southern District of New York, because I know that they've started, the prosecutor there is got a couple of investigations going on with Trump campaign aides and maybe even President Trump. But, you know, upon failing that, where are they going to go with this?
Well, the Congress has a slew of different things that they're investigating and starting investigations and impeachment proceedings and all. So, I mean, we are going to be mired in this for another couple of years. And, you know, I mean, there's a question that you and I ask each other often. Should we go back and prosecute Hillary for all the things that she did? And I absolutely think that there's is so many ways that she could be prosecuted. She received special treatment and she should have been prosecuted. But does the country have the temperament to want to be mired in this type of stuff for years to come?
Right. Well, I agree with you. I think the average American citizen just wants to move on and move America forward. There's been a tremendous obstruction and a delay to
a distraction.
Where, it's been just horrible. But you know what, Linda? I've got to tell you, I'm eagerly awaiting whatever we can learn about the Mueller investigation. But, you know, me as a forensic investigator, I want to go back to this thing. This should have never happened in the first place. And so my questions are, or actually my first statement to you would be, I think we do need to open up an investigation as to how this thing began in the first place, because I'm sure as God made little green apples that there was not enough probable cause for the affiants from DOJ and the FBI to approach the FISA judge in secret and present him with affidavits, which are, hey, we swear, and, you know, I've done so many of these, you know, for search warrants. I know you've done a few. And, you know, you got to stand in front of that judge, present all your documentation. You have to be very transparent. You got to answer all his questions. And at the final moment, you've got to raise your hand right in front of the judge and swear to everything that you're saying in your affidavit is true. And he bases his decision of probable cause on your statements to him, your responses to his questions, and what you have written down in your affidavit. And I'm going to tell you, you know, that I believe that there was insufficient information or they withheld information. I think it's the latter. They withheld information from the FISA court judge, and he issued those wiretaps based on that. And those people, if that's true, that's a felony. They need to be prosecuted.
Well, I agree, because I go back to feeling really bad for the people that were taken down and lost so much of their wealth, whatever it is, big or small. And, you know, just the trauma that they were put through this whole event, that everything to my mind, Ron, is like fruits of the poisonous tree.
Oh, I'm glad you said that, because that's exactly what this is. Because if your affidavit on its face and the information you provided that FISA judge on its face was faulty or it was incorrect or you deceived the judge, then everything that comes forward from the FISA warrant, that is excluded in a court of law.
And I'll tell you who's on top of this is my favorite organization, Judicial Watch.
Oh, and mine too. And that's why we donate to Judicial Watch. How about a cup of tea?
You got it.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our Response to Active Shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our Response to Active Shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to ResponseToActiveShooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, ResponseToActiveShooter.com, and be safe out there.
Well, there's nothing like having a hot cup of HEB orange spice tea. I just got to give HEB a little credit for that. Nothing fancy, but it goes down well.
You know, all their store brands are really good.
So anyway, so speaking of Texas, 700 more illegals captured by Border Patrol just the other night in the El Paso area, which just happens to be the area of former congressional Congressman Beto O'Rourke, who's now a 2020 presidential candidate. And guess what? And the other night before that, they had 300. So within two nights, Border Patrol captures 1,000 illegal aliens coming over our border, of which several of them were already identified as sex offenders. You telling me there's no crisis on our border?
Well, and it, you know what? That 1,000 is just there, and there was another 400 that were caught coming through somewhere else. There was even a double amputee found and rescued on one of those little islands in the river.
Rio Grande River.
That had to be rescued. He had gotten that far and he couldn't get across the river, but he said he was determined to illegally get into the United States. So yeah, there's a huge crisis on the border, and you know, most of the country doesn't live on the border of the United States and Mexico. So maybe they tend to ignore it, although these people spread far and wide through the country. But when you live in a border state, and both states that we've lived in are border states, you really see the impact of the illegal immigration across the border and how much flooding of it there is into our country.
Yeah, you know, and there's so many stories about illegal border crossings that it's just kind of like active shooters. You know, you see one and, oh my God, I'm horrified, you know, for like a day, and then it just goes away.
Yeah, people become immune to it.
Yeah, what's the word? Desensitized.
Exactly.
They become desensitized. But there is a huge, you know, crisis. And part of that crisis is that now all of our detention facilities in Texas are filled up. So when we bring in 1,000 more, guess what we have to do?
Well, and just in the last few days, they have released out of the Texas detention centers for illegals, 2,000 more immigrants. Now, last week they released another 700 or 1,000. So we are being flooded with these people. And, you know, if you're a Democrat, you may say, hey, great, you know, we're getting our way. But you need to think about the American citizens that are here in Texas. And by the way, like I said, they don't stay in Texas. They go to all corners of the country. And they bring their drugs and their problems with them.
Well, part of the problem, and there's so many, God, there's so many layers of this onion. What do you want for the United States' future? What do you want for your children's and their children's futures? Do you want a country like you and I, when we travel to Europe, we are seeing and hearing all the complaints about the culture completely changing. And I don't necessarily mean a culture of races or religions or anything like that. I'm talking about the culture, about what makes a country move forward. And what I mean by this, maybe culture is not the right word. It is to me, the working culture. What comprises the work men and women of the United States? How do we get employed? How do we stay employed? How do we manufacture things? How do we move the nation forward so that everybody benefits from that? And you do that by having a working class that is educated and job skilled and speaks the English language. And that's not what we're getting. We're getting the dregs. We're not getting our best candidates. And believe me, you and I are both children of immigrants. I'm first generation American. And so my folks came literally off the boat into this country, but they were educated and they had job skills and they became very successful here. And that is what I know President Trump is looking for. He's looking for bringing people from all different nations. He's not against immigration. He's against the type of immigration that we're seeing over these last many years. We get an uneducated, these illegals is what I'm referring to. We get an uneducated, non-English speaking, no job skilled individual from all over the world, and then they go on welfare, they can't do anything, they get disenfranchised with the United States, and then they become radicalized, and look at what we get afterwards. They decimate our cities, they cost us hundreds of billions of dollars, and don't move the country one inch forward.
Well, no, and a lot of our tax money that could be used to advance American citizens is being used to support illegals. And, you know, there's more and more coming over the border right now from Guatemala. And we've had some horrific crimes happen by some of the people from Guatemala just in the last week. The other thing that you mentioned to me today is you were pointing out how much money one of the illegals, just as an example, because this is rampant and the figures are astounding. If anybody takes the time to look at how many loopholes there are in our tax system that allow illegals to collect money from us, the American people, even though they don't donate into the system, and send it back home or keep it or do whatever they do.
Well, this one particular guy, and you're absolutely correct, the fraud on so many different agencies is astronomical. This happened to be a guy that's 83 years old now, illegal alien, and had a phony Social Security card his entire time being in the United States, and defrauded the United States government. And by the way, he's still here, okay? $284,000 of Social Security benefits that this individual has acquired from the taxpayers like you and me, all of it being fraudulent. When people like you and me are in a few years going to get ready for Social Security, and I think what's happening is we're going to look at a Social Security system that is going to be absolutely bankrupt because they have stolen from Social Security almost after Social Security was established, and I think it was in the FDR days. And then you get one of the 2020 candidates, what's her name?
Gillibrand.
Gillibrand is saying, oh yeah, well, we want Social Security benefits for illegal aliens. Are you kidding? How about Social Security benefits for the American citizens like you and me, Linda, that have been paying into that system all our lives?
Well, and it is really very, very disheartening, as is the Medicare system to me. But, you know, here's a figure that will just stagger you, Ron. Since December, and right now we're a few months later, they have released over 100,000 illegals into the United States out of custody.
And you know, 98%.
Detention, I should say.
And 98% of those, and I think people need to understand this because I don't think they do, 98% of those people never show up to court. And they just disappear into the system.
Well, and that's exactly what I would expect. And why would they not? Because there's no disincentive for them to not disappear and to show up to court. There's nothing that's going to happen to them. So we are losing this war big time. And we need this wall built. And, you know, we just have to get it. And I would also just like to point out, Dr. Martinelli, that yesterday I went in to our favorite HEB store and purchased myself a bag of pistachio nuts.
And I'm eating them right now as we're speaking.
And I'm watching you devour the entire bag right in front of me. I'd just like to point that out.
Okay, and thank you. I knew I was going to be in trouble because all of a sudden you went to the formal Dr. Martinelli. Okay, thanks a lot. I appreciate that. Well, since you just took me out in public, Linda, here, have some pistachio nuts for yourself.
Thank you. I think I will.
All right. Well, let's talk about a couple of our favorite people to criticize, and that's Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib. Okay, the dynamic duo of Muslim freshman congresspersons, and who've just recently suggested that we should cut our military spending budget.
Well, you know, the thing about these two ladies that really bothers me is when I think of a congressman or woman, I think of somebody that is representing Americans. And it seems that these two ladies are representing Muslim Americans. And I would expect them to do so, but I would expect them to have their priority be all Americans. So it seems that the speeches that they're giving and the money that they're raising is all on the side of CARE and Muslim organizations.
Well, you're referring to the Council on American-Islamic Relations.
Exactly.
Which is sort of a feeder organization, sometimes, to terrorist organizations.
Well, and that's what I've heard. They, of course, deny that. But, you know, I have watched both of these ladies speak at CARE events. And it is a pretty radical speech platform that they have there.
And they're definitely anti-Israeli, and CARE is absolutely anti-Israeli. But, you know, I don't have a problem. Here maybe we differ. Maybe we're on the same sheet of music here, because we often are. But I don't have a problem when you have a person of color, a person of religion, or a person of culture or sexuality speaking on behalf of their constituency. I don't have a problem with that. Okay, if you have gay Congress people, they're gonna advocate on behalf of the LGBTQ community. If you have Muslims like these two women, they're gonna advocate for their Muslim constituency. Or if you have a Jewish or a Christian politician, they're gonna do the same. But the problem I have is make sure you're advocating for all Americans.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
But also, you're advocating understanding how America strategically fits into the scheme of things internationally. Let me just give you a great example. We have just achieved a fantastic victory against the caliphate of ISIS. And we have literally pretty much pushed them out of Syria. And we have pushed them out, to a large extent, out of Afghanistan and all these other places. They have gone the way of the Taliban. Okay? They've gone that way. Goodbye. But we always need to be vigilant. So on the very eve where we have destroyed the ISIS stronghold in Syria, what do they want to do? They want to cut military spending. No, that's how we got there. That's how it went from an area bigger than the state of Ohio to like nothing. And so now we need to have maintenance of that program, and we have got to fix up our military that was decimated under the Obama administration, because guess what? We've got North Korea, we've got Russia, we've got China, we still have,
we have Venezuela.
We have Cuba. We have all sorts of people that don't like the United States, don't like Europe, and don't like our allies, and would like to see nothing better than for themselves coming in and taking over those countries.
Well, and that's just the point. I don't mind if all the people in Congress advocate, as you said, but when they advocate for one and against the other, I have a problem with that. So when you advocate for your Muslim community, great. And I can name you different people in the Muslim community who do just that, and I'm fine with it. But when you advocate for that community and against the Jewish community or against Israel, I have a problem with that.
Or American interests.
Or American
interests. Or American safety
such
and security.
Such as the military.
Exactly. Agreed.
And that, they are no more than a continuation of Obama's thought pattern with regards to our military. And they want to see the United States taken down a notch and sort of put in their place. And I don't appreciate it. And I'm not going to mince my words about my feelings about those two, because I don't think that they're friends of America. Another one that's interesting is AOC, who came up with the Green New Deal, the Green New Manifesto, as I like to call it. And her bluff has kind of been called, but she's calling it a bluff, where the GOP is now going to have a vote on her Green New Deal. So now she's upset that they're going to have a vote on her Green New Deal. So which way do you want it, Alexandria? Do you want your new Green Deal or do you not want it? Because if you think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, then let's have a vote on it.
Well, I think she's the next up-and-coming Nancy Pelosi. Can't read it before you vote on it.
Yeah.
You remember that? And that's the same thing. That's the same thing that's going to happen. No, let me just say it like it's true. Don't worry about voting on it. Let's just make it happen.
Well, she's aware that the Senate will never come up with the votes for her new Green Deal. So she's upset about that. And Mitch McConnell really has called her bluff on this whole thing. And she's calling it a bluff on the vote, that the Republicans are sort of in the wrong here. So it's kind of funny that you just put this out as just the greatest thing, but when you want to actually make it into something that has teeth, she's against it.
You can't
win with her.
Well, you know, the thing is that even when you start peeling back the layers of this onion, even just briefly, just the first couple of layers don't make any sense at all. They make absolutely no sense. And this is just pie in the sky stuff that makes people that are ignorant, they're not well informed, they're not educated about how the United States work and about commerce and really about climate change or anything like that. And it's kind of something that social justice warriors that are ignorant will resonate with, but not anybody that's got a brain in their head.
Yeah, and I'd like to see on paper who it is who votes for and against this. Now, what's interesting is a lot of the Democrats, they don't want their name attached one way or the other, so they have said that they were going to vote present, and I think that that's a really chicken thing for them to do.
Well, but that's what they did. If you remember, our former president, Obama, when he was a state senator at the time, what he used to do? He used to vote present all the time.
All the time, because he could never make a decision.
Exactly.
By the way, it's interesting that in the past, say, 50 years, there have been 10 other predictions, along with AOC's prediction that the world will end in 12 years, that our world would end. And by the way, all those dates are long past and we're still here.
Yep, I agree.
Hey, you look like you need another cup of tea. Let me get you one and we'll continue.
Oh, and let me get you more pistachios.
Thank you. I think I've had enough.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming, from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, young lady, thanks for topping me off. Hey, I've got a frost my socks moment I want to share with you.
Okay, let's go.
Well, you know how often you and I fly out of the San Antonio International Airport.
That's a great airport.
Every single week. It's like the secret airport in Texas, and we just love it to death. But, you know, the truth be told, there's kind of limited food opportunities there.
Let's be frank. It's a food desert.
Well, it's going to be more of a food desert because the city council, the city of San Antonio, just voted, unfortunately, to exclude one of our favorite places in Texas, and that's Chick-fil-A.
A political exclusion, I'm sure.
It is a political exclusion. And, you know, the one of the city council people, his name's Robert Trevino, when he was asked why the city council decided in this way to exclude this great food chain, he said, well, the decision was based on inclusivity. Wait a minute, I don't get it. You just excluded Chick-fil-A and you're talking about forwarding inclusivity. It doesn't make any sense. But then what he said, well, inclusivity meaning, and he referenced to Chick-fil-A's quote, anti-LGBTQ behavior. I'm going, what are you talking about? Have you ever looked at the mission statement of Chick-fil-A? Because it's posted in every single one of their restaurants and it's on their website. Have you even been to a Chick-fil-A? They are completely inclusive of every single person. They do not discriminate against anybody, gays, anybody in the LGBTQ. I mean, I get tired of all these different initials. I'm just going to call it the gay community. They don't, they treat everybody extremely respectful. Their staff loves them. They are the most, we've talked about this before on Talking
Yes,
While Married,
we have.
Talking about, you know, business. They are the most profitable food chain in the United States.
Yes.
Cities go nuts to bring them in.
Yes.
And
their food is good.
And their food is good.
And their service is excellent. Where do you find that anymore in fast food?
I know. Where do you go? I don't think that there is a single chain other than In-N-Out Burger that we had, you know, in California that we loved. I don't think there's a single other food chain other than Chick-fil-A that treats their employees with so much respect and pays them the most money. And when you go in there, they treat you like gold. And if you're law enforcement, I'm telling you what, they love their police, okay? They treat police. I mean, if you're wearing a uniform, it's hard for you to be able to pay for your food there. That's how nice they are. And not that cops go there to get free food, because they don't. I've seen cops in there many times paying for their food. They go there because they feel welcome. And everybody else, no matter what your sexuality is, they go to Chick-fil-A for two reasons. Number one, the food is fantastic. And number two, they're treated with respect. Great customer service. And for Mr. Trevino, who to me sounds ignorant and uneducated as to the mission statement and the values of Chick-fil-A, to call them prejudicial towards the gay community, this is a guy that just needs to be educated. And I hope some of our friends and listeners would get a hold of Robert Trevino, and would comment on his Facebook page and on the San Antonio City Council's Facebook page and anywhere in social media where City Council person Robert Trevino shows up.
Well, I agree with you because we're the losers as travelers there at the airport.
Good point.
And that's not fair to us because this guy has some sort of political agenda. And again, it's a mantra in this country. It's every day in every way. These politicians make decisions that benefit themselves and not the greater good for the people. This was a political decision, and I didn't know about it until you just told me
about
it.
Well, it's bent out of ignorance, and that's the thing that gets me.
It is. And to take our choice away as travelers is very frustrating. And what, I mean, bring in there, I'll tell you what, I love San Antonio Airport. There's only one place in there that I will eat food at, and they need to fix that. So, you know, here was a chance to fix it, and you let your politics get in the way of our dining experience at San Antonio Airport.
Well, you know, and Chick-fil-A, it's estimated, because there was a report on this, it's estimated that Chick-fil-A would be giving about $2 million a year to the city of San Antonio, which is a town that seriously is in need of money. Okay. And this just tells you what happens when you vote for city council people that you wouldn't even trust them to walk your dog or park your car. Okay. Because people that are not that educated about what Chick-fil-A is all about didn't even take the time to look at their mission statement, to go on their website, to understand the wonderful things that Chick-fil-A organization does with respect to donations, to service organizations, and they're very much into kids. You know, this is ridiculous. And like you said, Linda, you prevent all the travelers like us that support the airport and therefore support the city of San Antonio. You prevent us from having a good eating experience while we're using a city facility. It's absolutely disgraceful and needs to be reconsidered. You know what I would like to do? I'd like to go over the voting rolls, and I'd like to find out how much Mr. Trevino won against his opponent for the city council in the last election. And if it was just a few hundred people or maybe a couple of thousand people, well, I'd be really happy to marshal those people against Mr. Trevino and support an alternate candidate. And you know what? This next election, that's exactly what I'm going to do.
Well, there is a lady that I want to tell you about that I think is fascinating. She lives in Vermont. She is 84 years old, and she is heading to Poland to compete in a pole vaulting championship.
What? And how old is she?
84. She's going to compete in events including the long jump, 60-meter hurdles, 800-meter run, pentathlon, and her specialty, which is the pole vault.
Have we got a video of this, Linda?
You know,
darn it, this is radio.
This lady, she didn't even start in this event until she was in her 60s. She's always been active, but she took it up in her 60s, and she has continued to keep herself strong, and she works out. And she is the only person in her class and her age group in this event. So I think that probably gives her a win just by default. But good for her.
Oh, and well, wait a minute. What's her age group? She's in her 80s.
She's in her 80s, yeah.
So I know. So what's her age group start at?
Oh, well, I don't know. I guess somewhere in her 80s.
Are you telling me you're coming to Talking While Married and you are not prepared with some statistics here?
Okay, her age group is 80 to 84 years old. And by the way, her name is Flo Myler. And congratulations to her. I mean, I couldn't do it now. So God bless her for being able to go there and compete at 84 years old.
Flo, just watch yourself, okay? Just watch yourself. And, you know, don't take offense at this, but just have some paramedics on standby.
Oh, stop. Well, Ron, in case you didn't know, we just celebrated our vernal equinox, which is basically the first day of spring when the time is exactly equal day and night, and then the days start getting longer.
I've been waiting for this for months, okay? We went through the wintertime, and the trees are popping, and the blue bonnets are all over the place, and which is our Texas state flower. And it's just phenomenal. I just love sitting out here on our patio and just looking at all the beautiful buds and the greenery of our trees, which have been dormant during the wintertime, and looking down at our beautiful Guadalupe River.
Well, you know, it's interesting how the wildlife seems to know it's spring too, because all of a sudden you see just many more squirrels, and we saw bobcat hanging out, and just the animals and the birds are out en masse. Of course, the deer are, there's a crazy amount of those. And then in California, the wild poppies are going crazy. They just have the most ever. And I think in Texas, we have the most blue bonnets ever since...
For about the last 10 years, right? Yeah, because we had some good rain this year.
Yeah, so everybody who got good rain. Now, there are those who got a lot of good rain who it's been pretty tough for in that upper Midwest and the South, who are along that upper Mississippi Basin and the Red River and all the way to the south in the Mississippi, they still have a long way to go with flooding.
Well, you know, when we were in St. Louis, Missouri recently at the ILETA law enforcement conference, we ran into our good friend Ron Scheidt from Lincoln, Nebraska. And, you know, and I asked him because I said, you know, Ron, I've been watching the television. And I said, man, it just looks like you guys have been inundated with flooding. And he said, yeah, the problem was we got quite a bit of snow and then it melted and we're just not cut out for that. And so Ron, you know, has had a pretty hard time, you know, traversing around the state of Nebraska. Like you said, the Midwest is you know, completely flooded in certain areas. So, you know, our hearts go out, you know, to our Americans and our flyover states. And, you know, we just wish them well and safe travels to Ron Scheidt in his travels as a law enforcement trainer around the country. Well, Linda, here's a great story to talk about. And, you know, I pick on millennials from time to time, and I just couldn't help myself. I had to talk about this one. There's a new survey of 2,000 millennials that was commissioned by CBD Oil Company, which is referred to as NDACA. And it was the millennial stressors. And so they listed the top 20 stressors of millennials. And they had the top 16. I just want to talk about maybe the top 16 just for time's sake. And so these are the things that stress millennials out. So, I mean, without, you know, cheating or anything like that, what types of things do you think would stress millennials out? Global warming. I mean, that's huge. Global warming. Do you think war, famine, pestilence? What do you think is stressing out millennials?
So I have not seen this. So I would think that the first thing that would stress a millennial out is being without their cell phone.
Oh my God, you're pretty close. We're going to talk about that. Okay. We're definitely going to talk about that. So, I mean, millennials defined as those people that were between 16 and 30 years old. Okay, so, you know, some people that are 30 years old and younger than 30 years old are married and have kids. Well, you know, us as parents that have got four kids, kids stress you out, right?
Yes.
You know, how are the kids doing? School, right? How are they doing in school? How are they doing in their relationships? You would think that stressed millennials out. Not even in the top 20, okay? War. Remember you and me?
Oh, we used to
Vietnam
get under
War,
desk.
Right? And the draft, because we had a compulsory draft. I had a low draft number. I'm in school at the same time. I'm running for the United States and I'm saying, man, I'm on scholarship. You know, I'm stressed out, right? Am I going to be able to compete? Am I be able to go to school or they're going to ship me off to war? Those days, those were stressors. You know, a lot of things like that. Not even in the top 20. War, not in the top 20. Global warming, not in the top 20. None of the things that would stress out real adults in the top 20 millennials.
Okay, well, don't keep me waiting any longer.
So it's just so funny you mentioned cell phones because 25% out of the 16, 25% out of the 16s were cell phone related.
Oh, imagine my surprise.
And then 19% were related to a credit card.
Okay.
So between cell phones and credit cards, 44% of all millennials are stressed out just by those two things. And by the way, stressed out so much that the average of the 2,000 millennials that were stressed out, how many days of sleep disorders did they experience out of a year? Out of 360 days a year, how many days a year estimated are they suffering from sleep disorders?
Wow. I don't know, 200?
Oh, you, no, 138 days.
Okay, wow.
Okay. But so that's a lot.
That's a lot.
138 days. So, excuse me. So let me just get into what stresses them out. Number one, losing a wallet or a credit card. Now, I can understand that would stress you out. Okay.
Our son does that all the time, too.
Okay.
Have you seen my wallet?
That's a stressor.
He doesn't even live here, and he calls and says, have you seen my wallet?
That's a stressor. Okay. Number two, arguing with a partner.
Okay.
Okay.
That's a stressor.
I'll give it to him. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Number three, commutes and delays. That's the number three stressor. Now, you and I, living in California before, especially you that had the huge commute every single day back and forth, you would come home and you would be stressed. But I don't think you lost any sleepless nights over that. You just got up earlier in the day, in the morning, and you left, and a lot of that stress
was generation just kind of, they just take it in stride, and they just do what they have to do to get somewhere.
Number four, the big one. Losing a phone.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Okay.
And you know, it's interesting because I lost my phone just a few weeks ago in an airport. And I went on iPhone. I disabled the phone that I lost, got a new phone, and moved on the next day.
Right. I don't think you were stressed out for more than about 15 minutes.
No.
Okay. And believe me, you're a pretty busy person and that phone is like, you know, your portable office. Okay. Number five, and that is arriving late at work. Well, let me tell you what. If you set the alarm on your cell phone and you get up earlier in the day, if you know you've got the big commute, which is a stressor, you leave earlier and you get to work on time.
That just takes too much thinking.
Okay. Oh, this is a huge one. Number six, slow Wi-Fi.
Oh, that's a big stressor.
Well, you know, when you're on that phone and you're in areas where you have minimal Wi-Fi, I think that's probably going to contribute to it. Now, I didn't count those people as the 25%, you know, of cell phone related things, but I think there's a connection here.
Well, and I think, too, you have a lot of that generation that are gamers and they're playing games on the internet against other people.
Right.
So when the Wi-Fi is slow, that really, you know, they're trying to shoot some guy in the video game and everything's too slow.
Or they're playing a trivia thing like our daughter does all the time. Okay, now here's another one, Linda, cell phone related. My phone battery is dying.
Oh, well, I think you can usually tell quite a bit before it dies, so you probably should just take care of that and then you wouldn't be stressed about it.
Linda, what do you carry in your purse?
Oh, I carry too many chargers in my purse.
You carry one that's as big as a brick, okay, that can charge the car and your cell phone if something goes wrong. And then you've got another cell phone charger. And what did we give at our company parties this last Christmas to all of our staff? What did we give them?
Gave chargers to everybody. It's an important thing to have. And I'll tell you what, I wouldn't travel without it because I use it all the time. I don't want my Kindle to run out or my phone to run out. And so I just keep it there and it recharges everything. Spend a buck and get a charger.
Well, listen, we're running out of time on our discussion of this thing. But let me just do the last couple of them. Forgetting passwords. Forgetting the phone charger. Anyway, and just to wrap up the last few, number 10, forgetting your phone charger, which is what we just talked about, then losing your keys, paying bills, job interviews, another big one, my phone screen broke, and then credit card bills, and number 16 is check your engine light.
I like how they're worried about losing the credit card, but then they're worried about the credit card bill.
Well, you know what it shows me is the two things, okay? So 45% we said were cell phone and credit card related. So what are they on? They're on their cell phones all the time, and they're blowing up their credit cards.
Right.
That's what it shows me about the millennial generation, okay? But I got to give you the last two, all right? Because as a woman, okay, you'll find these funny. Number 19, choosing what to wear. That's a huge stressor. Now, I've never seen you stress over it.
No.
And then the last one, washing the dishes. Okay, so let me get this right. Okay, you are so stressed out in your life about choosing what to wear or washing the dishes that you're losing sleep over this. Are you got to be kidding me?
It's a tough life.
And by the way, they believe, and I think they said 58% of them said, 3 out of 5 said that their life is more stressful than that of the average American. Okay, let me tell you what, kids, we're thinking about a lot more higher level stuff than our cell phones and our credit cards.
And all right? Washing the dishes.
Or what to wear. All right? Well, that kind of puts us to bed tonight,
on that
okay?
Note, I don't think I'm going to lose any sleep
tonight. I think we're going to sleep like a couple of babies.